This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
Now as Kenny plays a soundtrack from Old School, we bring on the voice of the Sens here on TSN 1200. It's Dean Brown on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Usually when I hear a song like this and Gord joins us, This Gord loves, like, Dean, would you ever consider trying to outdance Gord, do your own little thing here?
Oh, heavens no.
Come on.
I am an exceptional dancer, either in the car or at the rink, for example, when Gord is up dancing, sitting in my seat. I'm a very good dancer if I'm only using half of my body. Coordinating both halves simultaneously and do it better than Gord? Impossible.
Don't tug on Superman's cape, is what you're saying, okay?
Yeah. Really. And you know what? If up in the booth, especially when they got the cameras on, and I think it's only necessary to have one of the two of us look dumb. And in that regard, Gord's got the crown. So I just sit back and watch like virtually everybody else. It's very enjoyable, very entertaining. And the thing that people sometimes do ask me, they say, like, when the cameras are on there, like, does he actually dance? I go, oh, yes, all the time. Oh, yeah, but, you know, Gord likes to move. It's not just when the camera's on. As a matter of fact, the last two times where they put the camera that goes on the big screen on Gord while he's dancing, he was unaware both times they were putting him on camera. He was dancing, and then they put him on camera. It wasn't staged. He's going.
No, that's a great point you bring up. Some people might, and you know what? Is he just pandering? Is he just, oh, the camera's on me? No, this one thing about our friend Gord, he's authentic. Yep. That's him. Okay.
Yep. When I wasn't there for a couple of games because of COVID, one of the other things, and he kind of laughed at himself, but the other thing people don't know is that Gord is an emotional broadcaster. And sometimes when things, seriously, when things frustrate him, as you're well aware, Lloydie, because you used to sit beside him. And he would hit you.
Desk like I'm doing right now.
Yes, or he'd bang the desk or he'd punch whoever's beside him. And the thing was, Lloydie, when you stopped sitting there, nobody has really permanently sat there since. So it's kind of just Gord and I, and Maddie's always behind us. So the hitting has been predominantly hitting me, which I'm fine with, you know. But Gord started laughing when he told me the story. When I was calling the games from Vancouver when I had COVID, he was swinging to hit somebody, and he was swinging at air because he was going to hit me, but I wasn't there to be hit. So he said, I realize it's involuntary because I'm even swinging at people who aren't present. I said, well, you know, just stay consistent. They'll be you. You be you.
No, I think I learned very early on. I think my first full season when I took over for Duffer back when would have been the 2001-2002 season, and I learned quickly. That's part of the gig. You're going to get punched by Gord nonstop throughout the game. So if you don't like it, quit, kid.
We did a few games this year from the broadcast booth right beside you guys. Mm-hmm. We were kicked out of our Bell location for a little bit. So we went beside you guys and we're sitting there enjoying the game and we're not coming on till the intermissions. And then, you could hear the whenever there was kind of a misconnection or something. It's like, oh, there's Gord Hammer on the table.
It's true. It's always been that way there, but there have been a couple of cases where we've had broadcasters in other booths kind of go, hey, cut it out. Because it kind of startles them. Because in some press boxes, the desk, they're not individual desks. When the thing was built, you know, they built 40 feet of desk and then put walls up. So the desk that you're pounding on is actually the desk in the next booth beside you. So when Gord would bang on it, the two booths beside us, their desk also is shaking, you know? And so I can't think of any that are still like that. But anyway, there were places where, you know, when they were building the press box, they built, 40 or 50 straight feet of desk, and it's the same desk. So if Gord's pounding on his, he's pounding on the one next and the one next, and, well, however hard he pounds, that's how far it goes. So the guy's looking, hey, can you settle it? What are you doing? Yeah, hey. Oh, okay, sorry about that. Yeah.
This has been off-season Gord talk here to kick it off. It's all good. Want to ask you about Tim Stützle, and we were having this discussion earlier. The good news is it's good news. multiple reports now saying not that serious, scary collision with some contact into the boards against France yesterday, left the game, did not return, apparent leg injury of some sort. And we all know, you know, he was playing hurt down the stretch quite a bit, but well enough to play. You wouldn't put himself in, or the team wouldn't put him in any danger. But the question I ask Graham, and I'll ask you, Pierre Dorion is there. DJ Smith is there. The Sens training staff is there. Would you have a conversation with Tim Stützle about, listen, we know you really want to play here, but let's be really honest about how you're feeling here. Is in your best interest with the offseason you need to have to hit the ground running in training camp that maybe you shouldn't play the rest of this tournament?
Oh, sure, absolutely. And the discussion wouldn't be limited to Tim Stützle. It would be also, and you mentioned the training staff is there, Dom Nicoletta, the head athletic therapist. So you couldn't be in a better position to have your best interests served in advising him. But you'd also be talking to his agent, and you'd be talking to the German medical staff that are right there with him. You know, Dom can't go sit in their room. They're going to talk to him and have a look at him and everything like that. But I think the other thing that you have to remember is that it might be different for the Olympics, but in the World Championships, I'm not sure there's a player that is going to put being in this tournament above in any way harming or slowing down his pro career. You know, I don't think Tim Stützle wants to gut it out so that Germany, you know, might get to the quarterfinals at the World Championships. It's not a best-on-best tournament. It's not the same as the Olympics. It's not one of those things where you're more inclined to, you know, possibly sacrifice your body a little bit, you know, because there's something great at stake. It's the World Championships. And I don't mean to demean it, but it's not a best-on-best tournament. It's not the Olympics. It's not the Stanley Cup playoffs, you know. So I don't think you'd have to convince Tim Stützle to shut it down if that's the best course of action. I think that he would want to do that and protect his off season and protect his training regime and not have to spend it rehabbing. He can spend it training. I don't think you'd have to talk him into it. And certainly, obviously, Germany wants to get him back. There's no question about that. But, you know, they're going to understand if an NHL player doesn't want to impact his NHL offseason and his training by having to rehab an injury that he played through just to help Germany get to the quarterfinals or, you know, five spots out of a medal. You know, like what I'm saying is I don't think you'd have to talk Tim Stützle into anything. If the best advice from the best people is that probably a good idea to shut this down, I have no doubts Tim would shut it down.
Yeah, just moving on to Stanley Cup playoffs, I'm excited for round two. I think all four matchups are super entertaining, and we'll begin with the Battle of Florida. What do you predict will happen in this one with the Panthers team, which was the best in the league in the regular season? Some lessons learned in the first round. Now they take on the two-time defending champs. What are your expectations?
I think they'll beat Tampa just because I don't think Tampa is healthy enough. And I heard you guys talking about, well, if he's out there, and that's true. But, you know, you can all see that, you know, oftentimes the Stanley Cup playoffs, it is a war of attrition. And even though guys are out there, we all know how many guys are playing with something, you know. And there's no question that it's admirable that Kucherov is out there, but it's also very clear that he is not healthy enough to be himself. And with Point out now, let's be honest, you know, you move up the depth chart, but there is no replacement. There's no depth replacement in Tampa for Point. You know, you bring Nash in, but Nash is not Point, and moving guys up isn't Point, you know. So I think that probably Tampa expelled too much and got a little too dinged up against Toronto to be able to push as hard as they're going to need to beat Florida. I still think all the shortcomings that Florida has will prevent them from getting to the Stanley Cup. I haven't changed my mind in that, but you know, I thought they would beat Washington, and I think they'll beat Tampa, but I don't think they're getting any further than that. But I just don't think that you know, physically that Tampa can match what Florida is going to be able to bring in this series, just because of you know, injury and guys that are playing injured. I think they just have they have more important guys playing with things than you need to be able to be as competitive as they have to beat a team like Florida.
Yeah, you're never going to replace your star players. You just try to do it by committee, do the best you can, and you see where it goes here. But having said that, Nick Paul is going to get even more of an opportunity to have an impact on the game, and he had one heck of an impact in that game 17. bigger picture, though, here. You know, Nick Paul and the Senators couldn't come together on a deal. They both wanted to have a deal done. Didn't work out. That's why he's in Tampa here. And you could say that maybe the player bet on himself a little bit. How much more money do you think Nick Paul maybe has already made himself in free agency with his next contract just based on his round one performance and especially his game seven?
Well, probably he's made some, you know. I'm sure it is. I have a feeling that it's not going to be in Tampa. I think that, you know, Tampa wanted to have him a different kind of third-line penalty killer than the one they gave up to get him. But it doesn't change, you know, where they are cap-wise and what they can spend on roles. And I don't think as good a game as he had in Game 7 and as good a playoff as he's had, I don't think that Tampa sees him differently when they line up their team and what they have coming. So, you know, they will have to have the same discussion about Nick Paul that they had about the guy they traded him for, you know. Can, you know, if he's going to get a new contract and if he's going to expect a raise, which he should, can we pay that much for what will be a third line player on our team? And, you know, that's the conversation Ottawa had to have with itself about Pageau. And that's the conversation that they had to have, you know, with themselves about Nick Paul. You know, what is our financial limit? Not do we love the player or not. Of course they love Nick Paul. They love Pageau. It's just every team at certain times has to go the process of what do we pay on our team for this position? And can we afford this player at that amount of money? There, just like there was the Islanders for Pageau, there will be a marketplace for Nick Paul at what he wants. But it wasn't Ottawa with what they've got coming, and I don't think it's going to be Tampa with the cap problems they're going to have. And, you know, I've heard people talk about, well, you know, like Toronto will probably jump into that. For God's sakes, Toronto right now is, what, $3 million over the cap as it is? They've got four forwards that make over half of their cap. You know, this idea, just plunk his name into any situation where he'd look good in their uniform. Nick Paul would look good in every uniform. But that's not the reality. But there's no question that I think that what this may do in the marketplace is it's going to make some general managers say, yeah, he's a third-line guy, but he has something that you can bump him up to second line and you're not going to lose anything. You may not get as much offense as you would get with a true second-line, you know, offensive forward. But he can do enough things. You can put him up there, and he's going to fill a role. So in those cases, then, you know, that GM can say to himself, yeah, you know, he wants more than generally what a third-line player gets, but I'm going to get more out of him. And I'm going to get, you know, what everybody says is a great locker room guy, and I'm going to get a guy that trains like a dog, and I'm going to get all those things. And so, yeah, for us, for our team, making that financial commitment, yeah, we can do that. But, you know, like I said, you know, I'll be surprised if he stays in Tampa when he becomes a UFA. But I think there's no question that his performance in that series may have changed, maybe not changed, but just accentuated the opinion that other GMs have about Nick Paul and what is reasonable on their team to try and sign him as a UFA.
Colorado Avalanche open up against the Blues. Can the Avs get over the second round hump?
Boy, that's a great question. And you know what, like Toronto creature, you don't know till you know. But I have a feeling this might be the one. But I also have a feeling that for Colorado, this will be their hardest series of the playoffs. Just St. Louis plays the type of game that is difficult for a team like Colorado. You know, they're so skilled, they're so fast. But, you know, St. Louis is a team that leans on you everywhere on the ice. And we've talked about this before. When you talk about heavy hockey, and it doesn't mean that St. Louis, you know, hammers you and puts you into the fifth row. That's not what we're talking about. We're just, the style that they play is that they just suffocate you. They're always leaning on you. You never get free space, you know, and that really is going to be the question. Can some of the better Colorado offensive players that generally against most teams get separation and get gap to be able to create things because they can get away from people, will they be able to get away from the guys in St. Louis that will be dedicated to having them not do that? That to me is going to be the interesting part of this. But like I said, you know, I think there's a very real possibility on their way to the Cup that Colorado may have this as their best or hardest series of the playoffs.
Dean Brown joining us. Size up the Battle of Alberta for us, which begins tomorrow night, Dean, Edmonton at Calgary for Game 1.
Yeah, I'd love to see Edmonton go on just because you'd love to see two of the three best players in the world playing all the way through. But I just don't know. I just don't know if they can get by the kind of game that Calgary can put together. I was totally off on the last series other than who was going to win it. I said Calgary would win it, but I thought it would be a sweep or five games. Maybe Dallas could win a game. I never thought that Dallas could play that way or get that kind of goaltending through a series. But now that Calgary's gotten through it, I just don't know if Edmonton can deal with Calgary's game. I just think that Calgary is deeper, thicker in far more places. And, you know, what round one really showed a lot of people about Edmonton is what they think about Edmonton is still pretty much true. You know, they needed everything to beat a Drew Doughty-less LA Kings team. You know, so when you take the best player off the other team and the guy who clocks the most minutes and you still just barely beat them in seven games, that doesn't say that you're rolling over people. And when you play a team like Calgary that is far more complete than LA is, it just leads you to believe. LA didn't even think they were making the playoffs this year. You know, in their rebuild, they kind of thought that next year was going to be their year to really challenge for a playoff spot and maybe win a round. So this year was all bonus for them. This was more than they expected, and they didn't expect much, you know, after they lost Doughty. But there they were. But, you know, Edmonton needing seven games to beat that team doesn't make me feel like they have a great chance against Calgary. They're going to win a game or two in the series for sure, because, like I said, you got two of the three best players in the world. They're going to have games where you can't control everything they do or negate it, or, you know. But I just don't know defensively, and I don't know goaltending-wise if they have enough to stop Calgary in a series that is probably going to be, I don't know, five or six games.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if, like L.A., what difference Calgary has losing their best defenseman to line up against McDavid with Tanev not in the lineup. We'll see how that ends up playing out. And just you mentioned goaltending. The Rangers get some, I guess, mediocre goaltending to start the series other than game one from Shesterkin, and then he was terrific to close it out. And the Hurricanes, not sure what the plan is going to end up being for the entire second round. Will Freddie Anderson be available? This is the last series we have to go over with you. What are your expectations from this one?
Well, it's not going to be a sweep. You know, New York can put up a fight, but I just think, again, Carolina's too complete. You know, if you look at Carolina, one of the things that their strength is that they have no strength. You know, there's nowhere where you go, that's their best guy there. That's their best defenseman. They are a team's team. You know, they don't have, you look at their point production, they don't have one monster guy. They don't have a 100-point guy or a 60-goal guy. They don't, you know, you look at their defense, you know, no one's sitting there saying Jacob Slavin should win the Norris Trophy. But the strength that they have with their defense, for example, is their number one defenseman isn't all that different from their number six defenseman, which is not demeaning to number one. What it says is that they have six really solid players that would be a one or two on almost any other team in the league. And so they just roll them out. They, you know, they don't have to worry as much about matchups and stuff because their third pair is as good as a lot of teams' first pair, you know, and it's the same with their forwards. You know, you don't get relief when you're playing Carolina. You might not have as much offense in lines three and four, but in a lot of cases, not that much different. You know, they can produce, and their better players can defend. And that's what makes them very, very hard to play against. There's no relief, you know, and I'm not saying it's easier when you're playing a Toronto or you're playing an Edmonton where you've got two or three guys that are exceptional offensive players. And so you concentrate your entire team defense on stopping them or at least slowing them down because you work off the principle that the rest of the team can't generate enough offense to beat you if you can control those guys. Well, how do you do that against Carolina? And which guys do you choose as the guys that you have to shut down? You know, that's the hard part. So, like I said, I like where the New York Rangers have come, and I like how they have come out of their rebuild, which was more of a retool than a rebuild. But they're a really solid young team. But I just think that Carolina is, as a group, just has such a high level as a group that you know they're gonna win that series. It's not going to be a sweep, but I think they're going to win that series.
Dean, Maple Leafs garbage bag day continues. Sheldon Keefe is speaking. Many of the players have spoken. Going to hear from Kyle Dubas here. In your opinion, It's the same old, unfortunately, for Leaf fans, right? Old school Sens fans, know your pain. You have a great team, and you're just not punching through, and back in those days, you're losing to the Leafs when it happened here. It's tough. Does this team need some major surgery? Some really, we got to move something big here and spread it around, or is it still, let's maintain, let's try to do the best we can, get the guys signed we need to sign? How would you approach it if you're Kyle Dubas? Oh. Do you something big, something small?
Oh, heavens, Lordy. I don't know. That's a great question. Because, you know, I think this first-round exit was different from the other ones because anybody, I think, you know, who's not a fan where it's an emotional thing, you know, where you just hate the Leafs. So, you know, but if you're just looking at it, taking a step back and it's just two hockey teams, you know, Tampa and Toronto, you know, in a lot of other series, Toronto would have won that series. They were really good an awful lot of the time. That thing went back and forth, and there wasn't much to choose. Well, there's one goal to choose between the two teams. That was it. So it's, you know, and who knows where the Leafs would have been able to go if they had been able to get over the first hump. But at least for me, Toronto is still a lopsided team. And so I'm not sure that I would be, you know, if I were a general manager, and God help the team or the league if I ever were, but if I were a general manager, it wouldn't be so much the reaction to this first-round loss that would cause me to think about it. It is the ongoing issue with this team, which is that it's lopsided. You know, you cannot argue that Matthews and Tavares and, you know, Nylander and, you know, Marner aren't exceptional players. You can't. But as far as the balance on this team goes, this team spends half, almost exactly half. What's the cap? 81 million, something like that. 81.5, something like that. It's only going up $1 million next year. So Toronto spends $41 million on four forwards. They spend half their cap on four forwards, not all their forwards, just four. You know, Matthews makes 11.6. Tavares makes 11. You know, Nylander makes 7. Marner makes 11. You got four forwards making half of the cap. And then, you know, you look right now, and if you look at this and you take Morgan Riley's raise next year, which takes him to $7.5 million, even with that raise, which wasn't in effect this year, the top three defensemen, half of their defense only makes $18 million. This team is lopsided. This team has invested in offense, and they're getting tons of it. But the problem is that in playoff hockey, and I'm not sure that I would characterize this year's first-round loss as a defensive lapse, but just in general, you know, teams that are better defensively go further in the playoffs. And so I'm not saying you have to gut all your good offensive players, but this team, before these playoffs even started, before last year's even started, I have said for a very long time that this team is unbalanced. And you have to get a greater distribution. And it's not just about getting a better partner for Morgan Riley. It's all about, you know, having more balance on this team. And I know that's not an easy thing to do, but this team is jammed against the cap, will always be jammed against the cap, which makes any moves of any consequence extremely difficult to make. I'm not saying it's easy, but my reaction would not be based on a knee-jerk reaction to them losing again in the first round. And I'm not saying that's a good thing, but I'm saying the problem, the underlying problem from the Leafs for the last several years has been the balance on this team. And unless they're willing to make a dramatic move to change that balance in a remarkable way, and that's going to require, I think, probably if they do make any kind of substantive change, it has to be a substantive change. And that means, you know, one of those four guys I mentioned, Matthews, Tavares, Marner, Nylander, trying to move one of those contracts and trying to devote that money to either a legitimate number one proven goaltender or a Norris caliber defenseman to go with Morgan Riley. So you have two. You know, there's talk about Carlson or Burns being moved in San Jose. Maybe you go after one of them. All I'm saying is my very long answer to a short question is my reaction wouldn't be knee jerk to this loss. Not that it's any better or worse than the others, but the ongoing issue for me on this team is still balance.
If you remove that balance, is it obviously Nylander?
Well, I think that people look at Nylander because they look at him as a guy that plays on the outside too much, even in the playoffs, won't go in the corner, has marvelous, marvelous ability when he's got the puck and is not that interested without the puck. So I think people look at Nylander as a guy where you say to yourself, you know, I'm just not sure he's committed to playing playoff-style hockey and he's going to get points. But I think if you want to change the mix on this team, that you have to look higher up. And I would think that John Tavares might be the guy in that, you know, unbelievable face-off guy. But his ability to generate anything outside of that is diminishing. And as he ages, it will diminish more. You know, you're always going to know what you're going to get with Nylander. And that's why he makes 7 and the other guys make 11. So do you say to yourself, with that skill and that talent, can we live with the fact that he likes to play on the outside and, you know, he's not going to defend all that well, but for his offense. But you also have to ask yourself a question about John Tavares. Is $11 million a proper thing for a guy who wins a ton of faceoffs and just at now can't produce a ton more than that? You know, he's going to get regular season points, but you saw in the playoffs, you know, against Tampa, he had a hard time getting chances, you know, and, you know, he's going to get some points. It's not like he's been shut out and this is a total failure, but I'm just saying, when you've got $11 million invested in a playoff, being a good leader who can win some faceoffs, you need way more than that. And let's face it, you know, you're talking about a situation where the difference between trying to move Nylander and trying to move Tavares is $4 million. Well, that's another player. Not a premier player, but that's another player, a whole other player that you've taken out of your budget. You know, that's a huge help. So the dollars, because they're so tight to the cap, the dollars have to be a part of the first part of every conversation, not just, well, you got to make a hockey deal. Well, Leafs aren't in a position. Every deal has to be a money deal because they're so hard against the cap, and that's just the reality.
And John Tavares is the only forward they have with a full no-move clause. Yeah. On top of the $11 million per year, and he turns 32 just before the start of next season. He's got 3 years left at $11 million a year. So
yeah, that's situational, Lloydy. Teams have had to in the past, and teams will continue to have to go to those guys, bend their knee, and say, "Will you do this? Will you help us out? You've been great here, but we want to do this." And the not so veiled threat is, John, if you don't want to, we understand you have that no movement clause signed in good faith. All I'm saying is, you know, even though we're paying you $11 million, you know, next year your ice time might be a lot less than it is this year because we have to push in a different way. And maybe you're not that second line center next year. So, you know, so then you kind of push him to, you know, to kind of make a decision because, yeah, you have the ability to tell them, no, you're not going to move. But they also have the ability to decide how much, when, and if you play. And a guy like John Tavares wants to end his career in some way, shape, or form playing, not watching.
All right, we'll leave it there, and when we speak again on Thursday, we'll have a couple of, all the game ones will be in the books, and we'll reevaluate from there. Dean, enjoy the hockey. We'll look forward to Thursday.
Boys, as always, thanks for the call.
Dean Brown, voice of the Sens and TSN 1200, joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. We are back in a moment, pushing towards 2 o'clock, where we'll hand the torch. The Leafs sage AJ Jakubek and Matty Vowles coming up with the drive. In the Box continues on TSN 1200.
This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
Now back to In the Box on TSN 1200.
Now, when did they play this song in the movie Creature? It seems like you'd know. I can't place it. This cover.
I can't either. I have one guess, but I okay. I'm not remembering the specific time. I'm just going out here trying to make a guess. A Hail Mary. Is it the like mud wrestling and stuff? When they're when they're going through their stuff to
with
commit
blue?
To, yeah, that's the only thing I can think of. But I have no idea. Kenny's not helping me here.
And if you're just joining us, what are they talking about? Kenny's playing the old school movie soundtrack. That's all his. That's his bumper tunes today here. But whenever I hear Louie Louie, my favorite. I love Motorhead's version. I love Lemmy singing a little Louie Louie. But Kenny's going to stay on point today. It's all about the old school. Thoughts coming in here on our conversation with Dean Brown. Guys, oh no. That was Dean Brown who just joined us. Just want to point this out. Guys, I agree with Gord.
How many times do they get that, you think?
Oh, I know. It's when they work together. Like, they've worked together for like 30 years. So it's going to happen. Guys, I agree with Gord that Tavares is overpaid. However, that's exactly why he's untradeable. Never mind his no-movement clause. Mrazek is the real issue. You know what? Maybe I'm in the minority on this. I think if John Tavares said, I will waive my no-move clause, I think you'd have to eat a little bit, but I still think that John Tavares is a good player that could go to another team and play well. I really do. I might be in the minority. I think it's you get a little too close to it and overanalyzing sometimes, I think. I know he's turning 32 in time for next season. He is not an $11 million player. What if you ate 30% of that and you bring that down just over $3 million? And the fact that his cash is now much lower than his cap hit, and that big time matters for teams. His cash next season is $7.95, and it's $7.95 for the rest of the deal each year with 3 years left. So I think it would, obviously he holds all the cards. He would have to agree to waive. I think you could move John Tavares and get some big time salary relief. Like I said, you probably got to eat a little bit, but I don't think that's an untradeable contract.
I don't think it's untradeable, but I think because of everything you just said, it's it also decreased the return value on what they get in a trade there. And that's what, like, I just feel like Nylander's the more likely candidate, and it's not because of the intangibles in the playoffs. It's because of his contract. And basically, like, if you look at the numbers, he outperforms what he's making. So I think you could get a real good return on that and address some other areas in that return, perhaps. Whereas if you're, I don't know that the Tavares deal will equal what you'd get because of not only because of eating, and that's not a problem to the Maple Leafs, but just his cap hit and what he is and his age. What did he say? He's 32?
He will be 32. He turns 32 in September.
How much time have we spent at the beginning of the show just talking about the young man's game now and where games go for a lot of guys on the other side of 30? So I don't know what value would be there.
But I get it. I really do. You're watching it unfold, and I know that he picked up some goals and some points towards the end of the series. But you know his numbers this year, what John Tavares did offensively for the Leafs?
Yeah, he had like 89 points or something like that.
76 points.
76.
In 79 games. Almost. He is, in his four seasons with the Maple Leafs, John Tavares is 6 points shy of being point a game through the duration of his time as a Leaf.
What was I thinking of?
It's not like he's fallen off a cliff here. Like, this is still a guy that's producing at pretty darn near a point a game pace. So, like I said, like, the biggest obstacle, well, the two, like, that's a lot of money and it's a lot of cap hit, and he's got the no move clause. But I wouldn't close the book on saying that's no way. Just I'm answering the text that came in here. You could trade him.
Oh, for sure. I'm not saying that either.
It's up to John Tavares. I disagree with the text that came in. You could move him. He's a quality player still. He is. He's just not an $11 million quality player. But he could go in and help another team, help their power play, great on face-off, and still produce, like, at almost a point-of-game pace right now. So it's not like his game is just like, oh, what happened to John Tavares? He just fell off a cliff. That has not happened yet, right? But the fear is the yet part, because you got 3 years left. He's turning 32 at the start of next season. But anyways, the Leafs garbage bag day continues here.
I feel like the sense is they want to run it back, point. Though. Like, I think they really, really like their team. They just, there are areas that they need to figure out how to get to the next level. And that's why I don't think it's going to be a major move like that. And anyone suggesting Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner, that's not happening. And if it is happening, you're making your team worse.
Yep. Like, make no mistake, if you're going to do something big, the easiest thing to do is trade Nylander. He makes the least amount. He's younger. You can move him. No problem at all. He does not have any trade protection. Bang. Easy. That's an easy, easy thing to do. But it'd be quite the decision to do it, because you got to be careful what you wish for. And I see the same things. I see the guy that's pulling up in the corner just driving you nuts, but then you see the ridiculous skill level that he has. Like, all right.
He had an 80-point season.
Like, it's just, yeah, like, so what it's tough. And this is, you think it's, well, it's not fun for Leaf fans right now. Fun's not the word for you. I know it sucks. Disappointment again. But it's, to have these kind of hockey discussions is fun. And internally for the Leafs and the discussions they're having, just to be a fly in the wall would be interesting about how they're evaluating. They're going through everybody. And then just forget about what you keep, right? It's like, what do you do with Jack Campbell's next contract? You got to sign him. Jack Campbell was really good. Jack Campbell gave them every chance to win. That was a question mark. Nothing wrong with Jack Campbell's game in that 7-game series. You lost, but that's not on him. He's proven it. He deserves a raise. He deserves to go and continue to be your number one goaltender. But you signed Mrazek to a lot of money for a backup. So how do you extricate yourself from that? Mikheyev, unrestricted free agent. He's 27 years old, seemed to really have a breakthrough. He had asked for a trade before last season, if people recall. So does he really want to be there? Have things changed since then? Because he played well. Can't afford him unless you do something else here. And I know there's a lot of people, you're talking about the Leafs too much. Forget it's the fact it's the team down the 401. It's one of the most interesting teams to talk about in this offseason, just because, as Dean pointed out, how top-heavy they are with these big-time talented players, and how maybe it's hurting them in other areas in the roster, and how do you make the call on that? Do you make the call and you move something big and you try to spread it around? And the easiest one in the world to do is Nylander. But that's certainly a trade creature that could backfire as well. That could come back and bite you if you don't get it right. Look at the return they got for Kadri. What do you think of Alex Kerfoot?
I started off our conversation on the Maple Leafs yesterday and today.
He's okay.
Upgrading those players. So that answers how I feel about Kerfoot.
Like, and Tyson Barry came in that deal? That's my thoughts on that deal. And I thought at the time, I understood why they traded Kadri, and I think it was time. Didn't do well in that deal. That's a bad trade. So if you're going to move somebody that's got real value, and Nylander does have real value, you better get it right. You don't just do it because, we better do this. He's soft. Better get rid of him. Careful. If you're doing that, make sure you know exactly what you're addressing, what you're bringing back. It's not just because we got to change up the mix. Caleb wants me to talk about the Leafs sucking. Sorry. I'm kind of doing that in a roundabout way.
We're
talking about changes.
You're interpreting that wrong. He's reacting to other people saying that you're talking too much Leafs. And Caleb's point is, talk about the Leafs sucking all day long, Lloyd. That's his point.
Oh, you think? Oh, that's his tone?
He's okay. Enjoying this.
He is. Okay. All right. What else we got? Let them wring their hands and cry. Enjoy it. Another one comes in. I didn't even see this one. I called it, though. Are we not in Ottawa? Why am I listening to too much noise about Toronto's team? Because they just lost, and there's question marks.
And they had garbage bag day today, so this quote's
coming out. And
they
had garbage bag today. Come on. Nylander, Mrazek for Chychrun plus would solve cap space problems while getting them a blue chip defenseman with team control. There you go, Chychrun.
Four Chychrun plus plus. No thank you if I'm the Coyotes. No thank you. Nylander, he's 26, I think. The Coyotes are not looking for a player of that age. They are not looking for an overpaid goaltender who has been injured. They're looking for some young players. Chychrun's what, 23, I think? 23, 24? He was 23 during the season.
Let's not go crazy here, Graham. What the Coyotes need, they need Murray and Zaitsev. Okay, that's what they need, right? To be fair, Sens fans throw that kind of crap out there, too.
Yeah, that's a different conversation, though. The Zaitsev is helping them get to the floor. Trading Chychrun for Nylander and Mrazek is not... Yep. No. Yep. No. First-round pick and prospect and another pick. That's what they're thinking.
Let's take one last break with one more segment straight ahead. And we'll turn it over to Lever Sage, AJ Jakubek, Matty Valls are coming your way with The Drive. Creature and I are back all week long, and we're going to spend a little bit more time on the PGA Championship tomorrow. Adam Stanley is going to join us for a tee-up. And when the tournament's underway, and our guest on Thursday is going to join me co-hosting the show again next week for a day. Brad Fritsch is going to join us coming up on Thursday as well. And if you haven't seen some of the, all the groupings are out. Tiger is going to play with Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy in a threesome at Southern Hills, which gets underway on Thursday as the rounds one and two groupings came out today. Back in a moment to wrap the show on In the Box on TSN 1200. All right. Oh, good one to end it with, Kenny.
Do you remember
old
this?
School soundtrack.
Remember this scene?
This is when they're heading out somewhere, isn't it?
This is when they're in the van. And they're trying to scare or kidnap the pledges. And,
that's right.
And
yes.
it's one of the funniest parts of the movie. They're tackling guys into the fountain. They're driving through the parking lot.
don't they run over a fire hydrant at one point or something like that too? Yeah.
There's a line I can't share, but Will Ferrell jumps out of the car when they kidnap the guy, the woman's husband in the grocery store, and I can't say it because Les swears all over the place, but it's hilarious.
Then he apologizes quickly, right?
Yeah, and I think he takes some of her groceries or something, just chips or something he takes.
All right, so that's been the theme today. Kenny's been using the old school soundtrack of the show. Pretty much out of show. All right, here we come. Here is the trade. It was just sent in through text how you're going to fix the Leafs from Perry. Matthews for Arizona's first, Keller, and Chychrun. There you go. Trading Austin Matthews back home, where Austin will play in a 4,800-seat arena for the next 3 or 4 years, maybe, and could end up playing in Houston.
I think they'd sell out, though.
I think so. I think they would here. Yeah, I can't see that one, Perry, but yeah. That's been always kind of been hanging there. Matthews, they didn't go super long-term. Well, it was a 5-year deal, correct?
Yeah.
It was a 5-year contract, so he's going to need another one. And anyways, but Perry, I don't think they're trading Austin Matthews. I don't think he's going to be – I don't think he's part of the problem. He's living up to his money and then some.